It is Friday the 5th of June 2015, and this is episode 248 of Digital Outbox. Welcome to another episode of Digital Outbox. I'm Chris, hosting, and I'm half joined by Ian today. Hello, Ian.
Good evening, Chris. Andy Muddy has my attention.
Yeah, we have split attention at the Scottish end today. Yes, he's doing all right at the moment.
Well, he's getting beat, but he's 2-1 up in his server, but he's slightly down in this game.
There you go. So we'll have a few more updates, and if you hear cheering in the background, it's just someone getting overexcited. So, yeah, good example.
So he just put an overhead right into the net, and he's now 15-40 down.
Oh dear!
We could just do a podcast with me doing like the scores.
this could be a spoiler to someone listening next week. So let's start the news. Silk Road. The operator, Ross Ulbricht, has been sentenced to life in jail. In fact, he's had multiple sentences handing down, and they're all to be served concurrently. But two of those sentences were life and no parole, basically. So this is the guy that set up Silk Road. Silk Road was set up to be the illegal marketplace online, basically. And there were all sorts of stuff that selling, all sorts of vice being sold. So be that drugs or even hitmen being sold on there. It's all a bit unsavory. Set up on the dark net, so not on the general internet. I think through sort of Tor network and stuff like that. But yes, that he has been brought to justice.
And the thing for me was, I mean, people were going, it was almost like, you know, should he be jailed because he set it up? You know, like the torrent sites and they say, well, we're just setting up links to things and we're not actually... He was making money off this. He knew exactly what was going on. And I don't think it's defendable at all.
Yeah, lots and lots of money. I mean, obviously, in his little world, that, you know, it was beyond the law, as he said. But they've caught up with him now. So he made something like 13.2 million in commission. So overall, the whole site was made $213 million.
And also, let's be clear, his defence was that he was a hacking victim and it was nothing to do with him, but the evidence was all on him and he's done it. So not only was he trying this, you know, I didn't know about it and I didn't, you know, blah, 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 I didn't profit, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. He then lied about it, you know, so it's like, no, guilty.
Yeah. I mean, you know, as sorry as he feels for himself now, he knew what he was doing, right? That's why he had this judgment brought down on him.
Yep.
Windows 10, we've had an arrival date. It's going to be born on July 29th. Congratulations, Microsoft. But it's only going to come to PCs and tablets. The phone, there's no sort of notification of when the phone release is going to happen. Free for Windows 7 and 8.1 users to upgrade.
I have registered. I am in the queue. So I bought 8.1 or 8, I guess I bought a couple of years ago when Microsoft were doing a fantastic offer for a VM for Mac, and also you could get a Windows license. Yeah. And lo and behold, fired it up. And yes, you can register your place in the queue. So seemingly over the next few weeks, if I switch on the VM, it will download in the background. And on July 29th, I can install.
Okay, well, I haven't got in the queue yet. I have got Basecamp on my Mac, so I probably will upgrade my 7. I think I've got version 7, something like that. So why not, eh? If it's free, why not? And I guess that's what they're hoping.
Have you tried 10 yet?
No.
It's very nice. I mean, I've downloaded it a couple of times, and I downloaded it and I've updated it since. And I do think they've kind of sorted the, you know, it's like the best of 7 with the good ideas from 8 that not ruined by a terrible UI.
Yeah, so that, I mean, that, and that's kind of what everyone's been calling out for a while now. So good that they, you know, it's the trend line for Microsoft is definitely on an improving trend.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so they've also talked about, they bought Wunderlist this week. So they've confirmed that that's happened. Rumored price of between $100 and $200 million. So this is just going to continue as it is currently now. But they're, you know, going into the future, I guess it's going to get integrated as into their own apps.
Yep,
Have you used Wandless?
Yes, I used it when it first came out, because there was lots.
I mean, I don't know why I asked, because you've used every single tool like that. Yeah.
Ooh. And I have went through kind of quite a lot of the to-do clients, you know, and task clients.
All of them.
Not all of them. And Wunderlist I did quite like at the start, because they had iOS clients and web clients, and mm-hmm. I thought this was good. But it was initially it was quite I thought it was quite limited, and they focused quite a lot on UI and not on features, which kind of hacked me off a bit. So I kind of drifted away, and then I went elsewhere, and I'm now using Todoist, and they updated I think late last year, so it was like kind of version 2, a lot more features and functionality. And
what I still don't get is, you know, $100-200 million dollars. I mean that seems quite cheap for a purchase nowadays. I mean, for these big companies it's quite cheap, but why can't they, why do these things cost more to develop than $100 or $200 million?
I know, and I mean,
I cannot imagine that they do. You can buy an awful lot of developers and hire them for an awfully long time for $100-200 million pounds or dollars, sorry.
I don't know if it's backed, because they did the same with Sunrise, so they bought a really good, you know,
is it just speed?
Calendar app.
Just speed and ease.
Well, I think it's speed, and also you're buying a user base. You're buying a mindshare as well. You know, so Wunderlist is very well known. They've got cloud. They're on all platforms. Whereas I think if Microsoft I'm probably being harsh.
I mean, they must. They've already got task software inside of, you know,
Outlook.
Quite a lot of their own products.
So Outlook's inside it, but I think it's the same with Sunrise. I mean, I was surprised at first when they bought it, but then I saw a screenshot from a Twitter user through the week just saying Microsoft now owns my productivity in iOS, and it was Sunrise, Wunderlist, and Outlook, because they bought that Outlook. I'm trying to remember what they bought, and then they rebranded it, but they've basically bought three apps, and for a lot of people they were. You know, that was their main productivity apps.
Yeah, okay. So, I mean, that's maybe, okay, it makes more sense. Fair
and
enough.
And I do think there's something about, you know, people poo-poo, you know, oh, Word, Excel, PowerPoint, you know, as if like that's only work people and I shouldn't use those. And then you start to look, and they do lots of, I mean, even OneNote's really come on leaps and bounds since initial, you know, dip, you know, in the water. It's actually really, really good.
I guess that's what you do by then, is the user engagement, isn't it? Whereas, you know, when Microsoft brings out a new product, everyone goes, ah, it's boring. Don't really give it the time of day. Whereas if it's already bought that, you know, had the buy-in.
I think that's where it is. But, I mean, it's interesting because Yahoo have done that. They've bought lots of apps, but then they all just kind of die and disappear.
Yahoo's still very quiet, isn't it? It's still, even though it kind of does things every now and again, it's not like they're always in the news doing stuff. It's
Microsoft seems to be almost constant, and they're buying and investing and they're making really good buys and they're building.
And releasing quick.
Whereas Yahoo seemed to buy an awful lot. I mean, it was like app, 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 and then nothing.
Thunderbolt 3. Reversible USB type C is going to be used for that, and there's a lot of talk. So is this an Intel owned property then, Thunderbolt?
It's always,
because I don't get it, because I thought it was an Apple proprietary, but this is owned by Intel, this new specification.
Yeah, and I think the original one was
so it wasn't proprietary then, it was just marketed
I think it was a bit of a joint thing, and I'm just going to look, because initially Lightpeak. Right back at the start, that's where it was kind of developed as.
Okay.
And I'm just trying to see if I can see like a history or something, but as usual, nothing jumps out quickly for me.
Okay, well, if you do have a look, so Thunderbolt, so this basically is the latest specification. It's going to be 40 gigabytes per second, so it's massively fat bandwidth. It's going to be able to support two 4K displays running at 60 hertz. So there's just ton, you know, basically it's one port that seems to be able to be delivering, you know, everything. Because it's also got the USB-C specification and it would fit the same port, it can take all those kind of devices. And USB-C seems to be the latest catch-on hub that everyone thinks is going to be used. So USB 3 is probably not going to be that long in to live.
No.
USB-C seems to be the way forward.
Because we're seeing it, and I was going to say high-end, but we're seeing it in that really you know, it's a high price, but you know, one port MacBook. We've seen it in the new Google Chrome Pixel, which we had two USB-Cs. And I think I was surprised actually when the Apple updated their, you know, laptop and iMac. Was it last week or week before? And there was no USB-C, but I think they're waiting for, is it Broadwell from Intel has just kind of lagged behind. And it sounds like the next version, so whether that's later this year or probably more next year, I think that's when you'll see it introduced. Or maybe we'll see something.
I still don't believe in the one port idea. I don't like it.
I don't like
having multiple ports.
I don't like the idea of just one port, but I quite like the idea of, see if it's just like one type and it can do everything and you can have like four of them.
Sure. Exactly, but have multiple of them so that you don't have to pick and choose what it is you're plugging in. I know you can daisy chain off of these kind of things, but it's not. It's just nice to be able to plug something in.
Yeah, and daisy chaining is not the cleanest because if you look at the MacBook, and I mean, I must admit, the last time I plugged something into probably my laptop was a year and a half ago. But I'm plugging stuff into my iMac all the time because I've got. If I only had one, hey, it's ice cream. Hey, summertime. But. Yeah, I don't know. I think we're both in agreement that you need more than just one physical port.
If anyone's going to prove us wrong, it's going to be Apple because they'll tell us we only need one, and then everyone will believe them, and then that will be life.
I honestly think Google was really smart. The Pixel, you know, two USB-Cs and they're either side. So if you want to plug power in one side or the other, you've got a choice.
Yeah. Okay, so that's all due.
They're saying later this year, but ramping up next year.
Which means that, you know, later this year is going to be available and then into the product ranges early next year. That's probably more like it, isn't it? MPs, UK, basically a bunch of MPs have got together and said that the surveillance law, two MPs have got together and said the surveillance laws that have been put through in emergency measures were breaching human rights. So they're trying to make a petition to the Court of Human Rights to have them reversed. And you know, they kind of make the arguments that we keep making, which is that these things got moved in via fake emergency measures. And they undermine everyone's privacy. You know, there's a disregard for the general population's views on this privacy.
And I guess the kind of slightly confusing thing is this has just come after the Conservatives announced that they're going to bring in like the Snoopers Charter. So this isn't to do with the Snoopers Charter. This is
These are the emergency measures that were snuck in at the end of last Parliament without due debate, due diligence, and all those kind of things.
Yeah. So it's slightly confusing, but. Well done. So this is David Davis, former Conservative Minister, and Tom Watson, who's standing as Deputy Leader for the Labour Party, who are fronting basically a Liberty sponsored court action.
Yeah, they're big enough hitters to pay, you know, for people to pay attention to. That's which is a good thing. But as they say, you know, the fact is that the underlying human rights legislation that they're trying to use here is being undermined by the current government anyway. They want to pull out of it, and the Snoopers Charter will be another sort of nail in their coffin on this, really. Not their coffin, really, it's our coffin, isn't it?
I mean, it all ties in. I mean, obviously the Conservatives have said we ought to, you know, ditch Human Rights Act as well, which is
It does seem like, so America have decided they're going to ramp back some of the intelligence agencies and the powers that they have, whereas in our country we seem to be certainly the government seems to be hell-bent on increasing the powers.
Yes, and at a pace as well. You know, it's not waiting 2 or 3 years for this all to let bed in. It's like, make hay.
I'm sure they have their reasons, and I'm sure they could happily argue me away. But the fact is just, you know, as far, you know, they know what's going on. I don't, if you like, but that's what they want you to believe.
Exactly. I don't think... I don't think everything we hear is bollocks, but a lot of the time when it's like, you know, you think everything's coursing along, and all of a sudden it's like, oh, we're on the highest terrorism alert, and everybody has to be vigilant. Yeah. And I do think there's a whole...
We've been on the highest terrorist alert for about 12 years now.
But I do think there's a whole, you know, rule by fear, justifies a whole lot of other things.
Personally, I don't feel any safer by knowing that they can have anyone's email addresses. I'd much rather it be focused down to the people they're, you know, worried about.
You find out that they had intelligence in people and you know, didn't enact upon it, and I'm sure that's
and they had it because they've got everything and they can't look through it all.
You know, it's back to the, if I've got this much information and it's untargeted, how do I find what I'm looking for? Whereas if you target it down, yes, you might miss some, but there's more chance, I think, of getting.
But we are mere minions in this game.
We are.
Facebook has been defending itself. A unsavory video. I can't say this popped up in my feed, but
I don't think I'd want to see it either.
No, I don't think I would either. I'm pretty sure I'd mark it if I don't want to see this.
Yeah.
Baby getting dunked in water, and it looked like it was pretty vicious. And basically, the NSPCC has made a complaint to Facebook that they shouldn't be allowing these things to be shared on their network. They should take responsibility for it. And they're kind of saying it's time that these social networks control the content that's visible on them, which I can't say I completely agree with, to be honest. As unsavory as this video does sound like it, you know, is, is it their responsibility?
It's a really difficult one, and that's why I put it in the show notes. It's not one that, you know, I've not seen it. I don't want to see it. I guess NSPCC are saying it is, you know, it's always tantamount to, you know, abuse, you know, and child abuse, and Facebook are saying, well, they believe it's better to be out there and viewed. Now, people are offended. There's tools there to go and hide it, and there's tools there to, you know, that they don't need to see it. But
and their argument being that, you know, it's, if you're sharing it with the intent of, you know, look at this, isn't it disgusting? Then that's different from sharing it, you know, with a view to, I don't know what other opinion you'd have on it, but I'm sure there are sick people out there who would have a different opinion.
And the thing is that I think the people behind the video have called it baby yoga, but being according to NSPCC, the baby is flung about in a very violent way, which could cause serious damage to its brain and its limbs, and we just don't think it's appropriate. And the bit I don't like is, I remember Facebook were, and I don't know if they still do, but they were doing all those kind of banning of pictures, you know, if you were breastfeeding or you had, you know, a breast out. And then they're okay with this, and then they were okay with beheading videos.
I was going to say, and that's the other thing, these kind of videos have been around, you know, for other things, so acts of war, and that they've been used for good in the uncovering of acts of war and things like that to show that the world, that these things are taking place and they're being silenced by, say, an oppressive regime or whatever. So, you know, where do you draw the line again? Do you just make it a fully sanitized area, or do you actually have to take responsibility for what you share? That's more the argument. Is it up to the social network to take that responsibility for you, or should you take that responsibility on yourself?
And that's where it's really difficult. I think that's where the social networks do have a challenge. I mean, I was reading. It's just depressing. I mean, let me just, footballer wife hits out of trolls. So BBC News, and it was Phil Neville's wife, talking about the abuse that both she and him get on Twitter. I mean, one of them was about her daughter, who is disabled. And it was like, you know, one Twitter user wrote about T-shirts with the slogan, Phil Neville's daughter is a spastic. You know, and it's like, it's back to, you know, we've talked about Twitter a number of times about they have to make tools for controlling and actually, punishing trolls. They have to do something.
I think that's, you know, it. But it's
a fine line
for identification and for being able to take action and to be able to block an unsavory user. Sure, but I don't think you should nanny state it. It is a hard one.
So the social, you know, media and networks have been around so long that they are now really mature in certain areas, but in others, I think there's still a lot of, not naivety, but just not much control there. But I think it's going to be constantly challenged. They're up against this hard line. How much do they control, and how much do they let go? Because also, I know right back at the start of Facebook, there was all that stuff about, you know, we need to be cool, you know, we don't want adverts and all that kind of stuff. And I'm sure Twitter's the same. You know, you want people there, you want content, you want eyeballs. And if you become controlling, people just go elsewhere because somebody else will stand up. Reddit, for example. You know, I remember Digg was the big thing, and then Digg started controlling things and saying, you can't post this on their site. Well, we'll go elsewhere. The mob will move.
Yeah. Yeah, and they do, and it's amazing how quickly they move as well. Once they get it in their head that they're going to move, like I say, Facebook's not necessarily the place for young kids anymore, is it? Or young people? They've moved on to these other networks, which are far hipper and
Snapchat, where there's no control,
which is totally unregulated kind of thing. Or even though they've come under pressure to regulate as well. So
yeah,
Okay, Tim Cook's been on the blowers, moaning about Facebook, Google, privacy, although he hadn't actually physically said them out loud. He went, made a speech to basically say people one day will regret the amount of data that they give to Facebook and Google.
Yes. And he's done this a few times. And I guess, I mean, Steve Jobs is always a bit more ranty. He was a bit more direct, you know, and Tim Cook's always been a bit more measured. And this was probably the kind of most pointed he's been. So I'm speaking to you from Silicon Valley, where some of the most prominent successful companies bought their business by lulling their customers into complacency about their personal information. And they're gobbling up everything, blah, blah, blah. It's not the kind of company Apple wants to be. And then it did have a real pop, and it was clear it was Google Photos. We believe the customer should be controlling their own information. You might like these so-called free services, but we don't think they're worth having your email, your search history, and now even your family photos data mined and sold off for God knows what advertising purpose. So it was a clear pop at...
Which is fine, but Apple has their own advertising network, doesn't it? And it has all the services. It happens to charge for those services. But you know, it's a bit pop calling the kettle black, I think.
I can see the kind of angle he's taken, but at the same time, I could turn around and say, if they had really strong cloud services, I'm pretty sure they wouldn't be as angry. You know, for an Apple, I'm paying for a service that's actually giving me less performance and less features than a free one.
Yeah, I'm sure it's a beautiful data center. I mean, the actual building, and I'm sure the servers are beautifully sculpted and nice and cool. They're just unfortunately not serving out the data rate. Although I think they've brought some of that under control. I mean, I'm not so embedded in it now, so I don't really know so much, but I'm sure they've brought some of it under control, but it wasn't working very well before.
Their stuff's, I would say, it's fine, but when you consider you're paying for it, like the Apple Photo stuff that they launched is working a treat for me. But the Google stuff, which is free, and yes, they're mining my data, it just does so much more. You know, so I've got everything up in the cloud, but it then starts to say, we've noticed all these events happening at the same time, so I've pulled into a collection for you without me having to tag.
And it does, and you get a nice email, and then you think, actually, that's pretty cool.
And all we've done is, there's five things you took. So it's a ship launch from like 12 years ago, and it created a gift for me.
Yeah, and it does an animated
gift. And I was like, you know, that is nice. And then you go in and you can just search for, I tried searching for things like Xbox, and it pulled back an Xbox controller.
Okay.
Not tagged. Not called, Xbox controller. And I was like, that's pretty damn good.
Spooky clever.
Yeah. So I don't know. There's some people get really irate about the way Google abuses information and how you're selling yourself. I don't really have a big problem, I've got to be honest. Maybe more fool me. Maybe in 10 years' time I'll regret it.
And that's all he said, wasn't it? You know, in time you may well regret all that you've given away. For the sake of being able to search for an Xbox controller. Google has this week created a new privacy panel, basically. So all of their privacy policies and abilities and settings are available under one dashboard. It's very easy to get to. I had a little look around it earlier this week when it pinged into my inbox. And it does seem that you can now pretty much have good visibility on the information that it does keep about you. So you can go and see, you know, when they talk about it tracks all your user data, well, you can actually now go and see that user data. So it could scare you off, or it could actually make you go, oh, that's quite interesting. So yeah, you can literally change the settings. You can see your search histories. You can remove items. You can, I did the location thing, which was interesting in that it did show my movements in general, but it showed me going to, I think it was, where was it? Leicester or something. And I haven't been to Leicester. So either my phone's been cloned or something went wrong.
Yeah. I have not tried it yet. It's something.
Yeah, all of their different services are listed out, and so you can go and have a look at location based. And like I say, it seemed pretty accurate up until the point that it sent me off somewhere I hadn't been.
And I think it's good. I mean, it's good that they're doing it. I'm in there just now. Oh, it actually looks quite smart.
Yeah, like I say, it is eye-opening. Just, you know, what they are searching. I mean, they literally know what you're watching on YouTube, what you're searching for, what, you know, who you're talking to, all those kind of things. They know that. And it's just how worried you are about that prospect.
Oh, yeah.
But anyway, you've got the controls now to lock that all down.
Yeah, I can now see my location history.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
While you're looking and enjoying your locations, Google Maps is now going to be showing real-time transit information in San Francisco, Chicago, UK, and more. So basically, they've teamed up with 6,000 transit authorities to bring that live information about buses and undergrounds and things like that, and trains.
And it's actually brilliant. I was looking for some big UI thing. It's not just you do your normal search, you know, from like I just did a quick one from the house here into town. Mm-hmm. And it shows you the driving route, the walking route, but you pick public transport and it shows you the buses and it shows the times and when the next one's coming.
And because it knows that information in real time, it can, you know, on the underground, it can pick you a faster route if the obvious route is running on delays or whatever.
Yep. Or even if you're like, you know, if you've got a couple of, you know, options, as you're saying, you know, do I take the bus, do I take the underground? And it's like, oh, that's nice. That's handy. Especially if it's a place where you're not, if you don't know.
What do you think Google's ultimate aim is here? Because, you know, effectively they've mapped everywhere. They're making 3D cities now. They're able to track anyone using an Android device, and probably anyone else using Google Maps, in other opportunities. They're mapping inside of buildings as well. So, you know, is their ultimate aim to have this sort of pulsating map where it knows where everyone and everything is? You know,
well, the thing I think they can do that within a given, you know, it's a bit like the face recognition. People say, you know, why don't we have that? It's like, well, they do have it. They just know there'll be an absolute privacy scare. If I did a Google search for Chris Hutchison and it pulled back every photo of you, people would be up in arms saying, well, where's my privacy? You know, fair enough, if I've tagged myself to do that, but if they're doing it for you and bringing back all that data, and I'm sure I know there's a whole advertising play around about tracking people in shopping centres and knowing where you go and linking it to devices. And we saw, I think about 3 years ago, there was a kind of company, and it must be UK-wide, but there was a company putting some of these kind of sensors in shopping centres here.
Mm-hmm.
And they were doing all this, you know, we will track, you know, even if you don't opt in, it wasn't an opt-in thing. It was when you go in, they will track based on phone signals and just pinging it around, and they will work out who's where and tying it up to video cameras and all sorts of nonsense. It's all pretty doable. When you look at what video cameras are now tracking, you know, with like supermarkets, it's all about where's the most expensive shelf so they can sell that shelf position to, you know.
The sheer amount of data that is there. I mean, a company like Google does know a lot more about what's happening in this world than governments do. You know, as far as, you know, all that transit information, because no one place owns all that information in one. You know, they have specialists looking at, say, the road network, so specialists look at the rail networks, but there's no one place where all that gets combined into one big mesh, and that seems to be what Google are doing, really.
Yeah, absolutely. And you tie it up with the whole, you know, people are searching for it and looking in it, and I don't know,
where's the end game?
Well, for me, it's always just been, I've loved maps. So see the whole Street View thing and adding everything in, and now it's just another layer of information that you can just...
Well, it's going to be now live maps where you can see all the buses as they're transiting around as well, isn't it? That's what it, and people, your friends, you'll be able to see them wandering around on the maps. And then we won't need to go out, and then we'll have virtual reality to go to those places. And
it's a Truman Show. Google are building a Truman Show.
Amazon Fire. Fire for kids.
Fire. This is somebody. Now,
fire. Play with fire.
Surely somebody thought, maybe this isn't a great name.
So this is the Amazon tablet. The Fire tablet, which they've now made a kid version, friendly version of. So it's kind of got a nice protective case so they can drop it all over the place. It's just a fully featured 6-inch tablet inside, but it's going to come with subscription to content. That's the basis of this. So you buy it, you have a monthly subscription, or, you know, when you first buy it, I think you get a year's subscription built in, and then it's a monthly cost from then on, cheaper for Prime users, containing, you know, I guess, movies and I don't know what else. Content.
Cartoons and kids programs and all that kind of good stuff. I don't know.
£119.
Yeah, and I don't think it's a bad shout because I mean,
cheap tablet, and it comes with 12 months worth of content.
Yep, and I know some of the folk I know with kids, and the tablet has become the TV for the kids. So instead of trying to keep films on the Skybox or the TiVo box, there's some videos on there. Just go and watch the same one again because they want to watch Frozen every day. And they don't get bored.
And you want to watch something else.
Yep. Plug your headphones in.
And off you go.
Pump your ass down there. And
and don't disturb me for the next 6 hours.
Welcome to Parenting 2015.
But they have called it Fire Tablet for Kids.
Yeah, it's just a horrible name.
It is silly. Go and play with the fire, kids. Lego. Basically, it's released a new game. Basically it's a kind of Minecraft competitor, it would appear. Come out on Steam. It's still in its early kind of infancy. It's not got all its features, it's not fully finished, but you can go and buy it early on Steam. And it's getting quite a lot of good praise, basically. So as you can imagine, a bit like Minecraft, you can build stuff but with Lego blocks, and it comes with a kind of default set, and you can even, there are sort of cars based around the real Lego sets that you can go and buy and things like that, so it's quite funky.
I'm just amazed it's taken them this long. Amazed with all the Lego games that
they have tried it before, though, haven't they?
I think there was one. I think 4 or 5 years ago, and it just never took off.
I'm sure I read they made a kind of MMO with it,
2010
and
Lego
and
Universe
never kicked off,
and they abandoned it in 2012. And obviously Minecraft took off. Microsoft have bought them now, and it'll be interesting to see if they can compete because I'm sure
Minecraft's got such a mindset.
Yeah. You know, it's such a big user base. You know, if you look at all the YouTube videos and all the community around it, it's hard. It's a bit like Warcraft. Warcraft, you know, maybe it wasn't the best, but it was the kind of the most polished out of all those kind of RPG games, and it just got the mindshare, and it still has a big following.
Massive.
Yeah. The money opportunities. You know, you imagine it. You know, sort of like, you know, all the tie-ins that they do, you know, as a new you know set comes out in the shops and the kids are buying it, and it's like, I want to buy it in the real world, the virtual world, and you can buy it for, you know, like a tenth of the price, but the amount of money they'll make out of that is huge.
I wonder how much they'll tie that in, because obviously one of the big things about Minecraft was it was completely kind of free to use once you'd paid your initial, and it was a low price to start with. That was the best thing about it. But, you know, didn't stop them making a shed load of money, did it?
Well, when I said the price of the model's not clear, so you can buy it for 12 quid just now, which is a reduced price, and they'll talk about, and it comes with preloaded play sets, but it's still the final release.
Yeah, so it does sound a bit like you're going to have this limited stash of blocks, doesn't it? Yeah. You have to buy more.
And the thing is, but I mean, for the licensed content, you know, does that become the downloadable stuff and everything else is free? But then do they do a subscription? Or do they just say, you know, £3 a month and you just get everything? You know, there's a whole load of things you could do.
Guess time will tell. And there's no saying that the Lego brand will take them a certain far, but whether it can outdo the might of Minecraft, who knows?
If they get...
Depends how if they can get the mechanic really nice and simple... because that's the biggest thing. Minecraft's a nice, simple mechanic, right? It's so easy.
But then, let's be honest, and this is a bit like the Apple Watch argument when people are saying it's not selling well. But if Apple sell like 5% of their phones, you know, that's millions and millions and millions.
Yeah, it's more successful than any other kind of product type.
If Lego get 5% of the Minecraft community, they're making loads of money.
But yeah, they are. But it may be, you know, it's not where they're aiming for, really, is it? That's the thing.
No.
Someone might be getting lucky. So they, an old lady sent to a recycling centre and a bunch of old computers. And as it turns out, one of those computers happened to be Apple One, which only 200 were ever made. And the recycling firm noticed this product and sold it for £131,000.
Which is amazing.
Now they're launching a really big campaign to try and find the lady, to give her half the cost, half the money that they raised from this sale, probably because otherwise they'd be beaten to death by the Facebook mobs. You're going to, you know, if they do find her, she's going to, you know, kick herself a bit.
Absolutely. It just shows you, you know, sometimes one man's junk is another man's, is it gold? I don't know.
And they said it, so that it's the recycling firm that's saying it was dropped off by an old lady, 60 to 70 years old. It's probably it's probably a young man.
Well, what they're
we're
saying,
we're looking for an old lady.
Yeah, what they're saying is they don't want to release too many details because then they're worried about people chasing her and all that kind of nonsense. But one of the guys says, you know, when she comes in, he will definitely know her because he remembers her, remembers what she looks like. And so I'm guessing when she brought them in, they maybe had a chat or whatever. But it's I don't know. It's funny because my mum won't be watching like an Antiques Roadshow or one of these kind of floggets and go, "Put my neck, I threw that out." And it's £1,000 for some crap plate that just looks like the worst thing ever. Yeah. So
mine didn't even have a chip.
Yeah, I've still got my SNES up the stairs, but when I looked on eBay, it's £50. So it's not quite a collector's item.
I think it'll take I think there's probably too many of those around.
No, it'll never be. It's just one of these things. All the stuff that we've flipped through now is mass market.
Unfortunately, yeah, they're literally sold in there, you know, hundreds of millions or whatever.
Yeah, you know, it's like thinking like somebody, you know, like the Wii U might have some sort of value, and it's like, no. Or the Wii U might have some value because it's like...
They've already sold 20 of them.
Yeah.
It's fine. Yeah. Okay, have you got a pick for us?
I do.
Or do you need to get back to Andy? You've got a pick, okay.
No, Muddy Games rained off. The storm's coming.
It's been... okay, it has come.
Three each and the fourth. He hung in there. Honestly, there was some epic games. He really hung in well.
Get it right. So we can't give a spoiler then because we're not going to know. Till
get it right up, you jocker, it's even if you win.
You winning person.
Geometry Wars 3. This has been out on Xbox and PS4 for quite a while, but it's now on iOS.
Yes, I noticed that come to iOS. And does it translate okay?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Yeah. I love it.
Has it got a virtual control pad?
Of course it has.
But does it work?
Yeah, well, it works for me.
Okay, well, that's good. Because I don't like them. But
yeah.
And I never liked Geometry Wars, so this pick's rubbish.
I'm liking how you got really excited and it was like, but I don't like the virtual sticks and I hate Geometry Wars.
Yeah. other than that, it sounds really good.
Plays really smooth. It's got so the what was new in Geometry Wars 3 was instead of the kind of flat landscape, there's it's like surfaces you can rotate around. Right. So some of the enemies are more hidden, and also there's bosses and there's a bit more of a kind of story mode to go through. But you can flip over to like the classic mode. So all the ones that were in Geometry Wars 2 are there. And it's just
so you've
like,
got basically the full Geometry Wars 2 game plus a bit extra game.
Yeah, and it plays really nicely. And it's like £4. And it's that's on the iPad, it's just great.
Good for
I tried it on iPhone, it's a bit too small. iPad's where it's at.
There you go. So nice little pick for people who like those kind of things.
Yeah, but so great for me, horrible for Chris.
And I'm going to try Todoist, one of your recommended to-do list.
Oh, I love Todoist.
I decided I'm going to need that. So I'll report back on my findings on Todoist.
And Todoist is free. But if you want to unlock something, like if you want to put notes against things and do some other things, I think it's, is it £20 a year or something? Or £20 one off?
Break the bank.
And they kind of updated about 6-8 weeks ago to a newer version, which had, you know, some nice new features and UI. The Watch Edition came out last week. So I've now got to do is my watch.
So they really are everywhere. They're trying to be everywhere.
Oh, absolutely. So and there was they launched a thing new this week. I think it was PowerApp.todoist. So basically this is a way for developers to use their APIs to start hooking in to other platforms. So if you hook up like Evernote and Todoist and you've got just see me and you're sharing a folder of stuff inside Evernote. You can now tie up a Evernote reminder to a Todoist. So again, you've seen it in one place. You can see your to-dos on Google Calendar. So there's a whole load of integration going on and it really looks good.
They'll be bought soon.
And also, unlike reminders and a few other things, their sync works flawlessly. So that's me being a year and a half, never had an issue and it's lightning. So really, really, really like it.
Oh, and for anyone like me who hadn't watched Silicon Valley till this date, go watch it because it's great.
And you know, everybody's saying season 2 is better than season 1, and I think I preferred season 1, surprisingly. I don't know why.
I've watched the whole thing as just one big massive block, so it doesn't really make any difference to me. I don't really notice the difference between season 1 and season 2, but it just, I love it. I think it's great.
I've liked,
well observed.
Exactly, and I like more of the kind of in jokes. Like they were kind of like there's a whole stuff about Kevin Rose and Digg and how his latest products all were. Yeah,
they're not averse to a deep reference coding joke.
Yeah,
here there. It's good. I like it. It's good. Anyway, if you want to find out more about the kind of things we like, things we do, digitaloutbox.com. info@digitaloutbox.com if you want to talk to us. And Twitter is digitaloutbox. I am on Twitter. It's CheesyUK, although you wouldn't necessarily know it by looking at my feed. I am on... my blogging happens at academyracer.co.uk. So all my racing stuff that's going on. Still a couple of weeks till Holland, but building up to that. So, Ian, where can we find you?
Blog is iand.net, Twitter is Reaper. And I was going to check with you when you're next racing because it's WWDC next week. So...
Problem is, yeah, okay, well, we'll figure out our schedules. We'll get as many out as we can.
Well, if you're a couple of weeks away, that's fine.
Yeah, it's all good.
Yeah.
It just might be the week following. I am...
Oh, that's fine.
Unavailable for a week. So we'll work out our schedules between us.
There's always a vacuum after, you know, big Apple and Google events.
Yeah, because nothing else goes on.
Ha.
Let's talk to you next time. Goodbye.
Ta-da.
WWDC.
Victoire.
No. Non-victoire.
Oh, come on.
Le storm. Le pleu.
Yeah, basically there was like a couple of drops of rain and they were like, oh, get off the court.
Le pleu.